Everybody, happy new week. I'm coming to you today from the other head office up on the Gold Coast. I'm up here for the month of September. And next to me, I have one of our hot off the press, newly published authors, well, nearly of two books, but we're going to talk about the first one here today, Jacinta Juma, author of Trust Your Gut. You can see it there in the background of her. Show us the book, Jacinta. She's the real thing. Love it. And you got that only a couple of weeks ago, didn't you?
I did, yeah, about 2 weeks.
I love it. And we were just reminiscing when we met, and it was in December last year, and what is it, September now? So it's been like 9 months, and the second book, you've already done a second retreat program, which that's kind of underway as well. So congratulations. I'm so excited for everything you've done and the people that you're helping. So before we begin the official part, let me introduce you to Jacinta and who she is and, you know, where she's coming from and, you know, what she's going to share with us today. So, guys, Jacinta Juma is the author of Trust Your Gut, and That Crushing Feeling is the other book title. She has extensive life experience in dealing with those with additional needs, not only through family life, but also through choosing to work with our special and unique members of families and the families as a unit to assist them in being the best they can be. Jacinta has lived and traveled the road of discovering that your child has a disability and that needs to be done. What needs to be done to get a diagnosis. Experiencing firsthand emotions of shock, denial, grief, anger, and determination, she knows the roller coaster you must take to help the ones you love. Jacinta has done extensive training and study to complement her life experience, including a diploma in counseling, diploma in community services, and a certificate as a teacher's aide. Whether it be a behavioral, physical, or mental, she strives to find ways to help individuals and families to see that being different can be a blessing. Awesome. That's wonderful. So tell us, you know, before we met in December last year, you know, how had you been thinking about writing a book? Because I know this all has to do around the diagnosis, and give me the backstory, I guess, of how this all came about.
So for years, I'd actually thought about writing a romance novel. So it's something very different, and I'd started it many times, but then back when my son was 2, he's now 9, he turned 9 yesterday, something just wasn't sitting quite right. Something, he wouldn't like to wear pants, he wouldn't, there were certain textures, but everyone said he's being a boy. So it wasn't until COVID, the first round of COVID, that my swim school was shut down. And I became a full-time school teacher. And I called for our first break, and he went and sat against the wall. He didn't go outside. And I thought, nah, something's wrong here. So I rang the school. And I couldn't, even though he's a lefty and he went to school now, where COVID was hit us in the first 8 weeks of first term. And something just wasn't sitting right. So that's when we decided we couldn't get on the public system, being rural, regional, New South Wales. I'm up in Tamworth. It's a 2-year wait. So we went private testing, and I realised that all the emotions and everything that I was going through and the struggles and the hurdles, there had to be other parents out there. And that's when I decided that I needed to write mine and my son's story so other people realize that there are others out there struggling, how to find the help, how to laugh at your own situation, and all sorts of things that happen, and not only for you and that child, but for the entire family unit. So I'd actually written the book by March. That very first retreat, I think it was the March retreat that I sat, and I'd actually completely written the book over the Christmas holidays, because I signed up the day before you left to go for your white Christmas. I'd actually written it by the first retreat.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, so you had all this information that was already stuff that he had experienced, and I remember you saying, I still got to add the final chapter.
Yes.
Yep.
So It has taken us 3 years to get a diagnosis. We have paid completely to go private. We could not get into the public system. And that final chapter was waiting for the final diagnosis. So they completely missed him in quite high end, what you would call high need, because I worked so closely with him and I worked, and I was not a stay-at-home mum, I ran a sim school from home so I could work with the kids. So that's why it took so long for the book to come out, is because they didn't give me my final chapter. So once that final chapter came through, then it was full steam ahead and we were able to.
And tell me, so what do you hope to do with this book? Like, you know, who are you hoping to help, and what can people expect to get from it when they're reading it?
I want to send it out there to as many daycares, schools that I can, to make parents realise that if you've got a gut feeling that something's wrong, jump up and down, make the noise, because I didn't. And my child's now 9. I'm lucky I was such a hands-on mum and he got so much help at home. But a lot of parents that work not 9-to-5 jobs, they may not leave at 6 o'clock in the morning and not get home till 8 o'clock at night. Make the noise. Make someone listen. Go and find your little village on Facebook. Go and contact me. So making them realise that they're not alone. They don't have to walk down this path by themselves. And we can do it together.
And you support families, like, you know, with children with behavioural problems and things like that. How do you support families? Because Inspire Services...
I always ran Inspire Fitness Training, which was my swim school. And then Inspire Mental Health was born during the book, where I could help families. A lot of the time you take a little person and put them in a four-wall bright room. And I know for my son, he watched the clock because he knew if he attended this appointment and he sat there for an hour, on that hour he got Subway at the end. So his aim was wait till the big hand gets to the top, and he got a treat. So I actually run mental health services, not only for the child who has the diagnosis, but for the entire family. So however many kids are in the family unit, I actually take them all on in the session. We play on the trampoline. We have an insane amount of animals, 7 dogs, 4 guinea pigs, 6 rabbits, some chickens. And we use all of that to get them to open up and see whether there's something that they can tell us of how they're struggling. So we try and get them to forget why they're here. And then all of a sudden it just comes out. And that's when I know that I can help them. Helping the siblings understand why their brother or sister the way there is. And it's not a negative thing. It's just we have to work differently.
Yeah, beautiful. And so that's more hands-on, obviously, face-to-face in the Tamworth area and the surrounds. Do you work with people online? And
I do work with people online. Online is more of the parents, so that they can understand what steps to take next. If their child goes into meltdown, strategies to help that, particularly if you're in public. Nothing worse than having a child of an older age go into meltdown like a 3-year-old. And technology is a tough one. So we're actually starting a new program. I'm going to read a book every night around different, 100% different things. We're going to do one for the younger ones and then a chapter book for the older ones. And at the end of it, I'm the one telling them, you've had your technology, put it down, it's time for bed, to try and take that fight away from the parents.
Very cool. Very cool. I love how passionate you are, and I've watched a lot of your live streams that you do, like on your personal page, and, you know, I think they're all super valuable because you've worked with children and families for such a long time, even just through the swim school. you have so much hands-on experience and insights that seem simple, but they're not, because, you know, it comes from years and years of working with families and children, right?
Yeah, it's not something you pick up overnight. No. It's not something that can be learned out of a textbook. It's something you need life experience with.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing I say to people, if you see a mum struggling while they're dealing with the meltdown, offer to push a trolley, offer to help in any way you can, because it's not just that child being naughty. It's that child having too many sensory options in a shopping centre and they don't know how to process it.
Yeah.
So, and it might have been something simple that a stranger has stared at them the wrong way, and that's been enough to set them off if they've been having a bad day.
Yeah.
So we really need to come together as a community, because it is on the rise. They don't know why it's on the rise. It could be environmental. It could be the chemicals they're putting in our foods, the chemicals that are put in our deodorants and our perfumes. They don't know why it's on the rise, but
it's
numbers are getting up there.
Yeah. So what are some signs, Jacinta? You know, you said it was missed, like he could have been caught maybe when he was younger and all that, and then luckily you got to spend a lot of time at the start of COVID with him and all that. So what are some signs that parents may notice and they're not sure, or all that sort of stuff?
The biggest sign, my son was not yet two, and he hated wearing pants.
Yeah.
He wasn't coordinated enough to take them off yet, so he would crawl and drag his knees until those pants came off.
Right.
He just, clothes were not an option for him. So long as he was in a nappy, and the minute his clothes got, even if he spilt water on himself, yes, had full change of clothes, pants, the whole lot. Even though it's just down the front of your shirt, he couldn't stand it.
Yes.
Couldn't stand walking on grass or sand.
It's a different
thing. Had to have shoes on.
Yeah.
And the biggest one that probably set me off was one day the daycare rang and he'd run headfirst into the collarbone fence.
Mm-hmm.
No one knew why. No one knew. He was just running around and suddenly hit the fence.
Yeah.
So a lot of us will sit back and laugh at little bits and pieces, and you sit back now and laugh. I laugh at my own situation.
Yeah.
But at that time, the parents are frustrated. They're upset. They don't know where to go. So if you've got a child that's and I think the biggest thing that set me off for mine, they won't eat sugar. They won't eat juice, cake, chocolate milk, ice cream, anything really, really sweet. They won't touch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a big asterisk to say there could be something wrong there, because that's where kids, children head.
Yeah, that's all the kids want to have, right?
Yeah, yeah. And mine wouldn't, and to this day, they won't touch it. They won't, yeah.
So how do you manage it now? Like, what is it that you have learned to do and that you do and that you advise some families, you know, how do you live with this, you know?
One of the biggest things is medication. Nate's got ADHD and autism, and a lot of people frown on medicating. But I say to parents, sit down, read everything you possibly can, talk to people who have ADHD children, because I did choose to medicate. And that's a big sanity. We can't medicate all the time, because it does have an effect on their appetite, and our little people just lose too much weight. But school time, for them to be able to, I remember one specific time he came home, he was on his medication, and I was in the pool teaching, supposed to be working. He said, "Mum, I need your wallet." "What for, buddy?" And he went in and he was able to come out and take every note and every coin and add it up. And the parents on the sideline, my swim school was very much my village at that point, didn't mind me stopping, and I just had tears rolling down my eyes because the medication stopped his brain enough that he could, it would sink in. So the biggest thing I say is you need to do what's right for you, your family, and it's the same thing as I say to newborn, like mums with newborns, take on board what you like and throw the rest in the bin. It's your child. Every child is different. We cope of an afternoon. We play a lot of soccer in the house. In our house, soccer is actually allowed down the hallway inside the house if it's raining.
Yes.
Because these kids can't sit still. They don't know how.
Yeah.
Unless they're medicated. And as I said, you can't do it 100% of the time. So we play soccer down the hallway. There's a lot of dings and donks in my hall. And if you have a child that is really, really struggling, find a therapy animal, guinea pig, rabbit, dog, because you'll find that that animal will learn, and they'll learn that when the child starts to go into meltdown or start a panic attack, that animal will head to your little person and just sit there while they get patted.
Yeah.
And reach out. I'm always on Facebook. Don't feel that you can't. I'll support anyone all the way because I know what it's like to walk it alone.
A lot of adults also go undetected from having ADHD and all that sort of stuff. And I know amongst our authors, there's many who have said, you know, this has been kind of my journey, you know. Is it something that we haven't known about and we just kind of know more and more and now it's coming to the surface?
It is. So halfway through the book, I got diagnosed with ADHD. It is hereditary. So it comes from somewhere. If you find that you can't concentrate and you're hyperactive and you're constantly on the go and you can't sit by the pool and relax, then there's a telltale sign.
Right.
So dealing with ADHD is a nightmare. Back in our day, I remember it was, they said, oh, the child's being naughty, just smack them. Unfortunately, you can't smack ADHD and autism out of a child. You're just doing more damage. And look, I'll put my hand up. We've all had a go at those points where you lose your temper and the hand goes across the bum. But yeah, it's, if your child has ADHD and you find yourself not being able to concentrate on what you need to do, as a child, it's done through a pediatrician. As an adult, it's done through a psychiatrist. And I've never been more focused in my life since they medicated me. If you have big telltale sign, if you have a really, really messy household or if your household is spotless, it can go either way. So your house either looks like a bomb shelter or, yeah, nothing can be out of place, and they're good telltale signs that you do have ADHD.
That's very interesting. It's great way to kind of look at it. And yeah, sometimes you wonder, you know, you go, oh, you know, because some people have said to me, Nat, you do so much and da 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 and all that kind of stuff. You know, I think you have some aspect of it. I've never gone to, you know, it's never been something that, you know, I guess it has to, there has to be a frustration around certain things. And then a need to find an understanding or an answer in order for someone to go and get tested, because I don't know, how does it happen for an adult then?
I was actually sitting at my son's testing and one of the psychologists turned around and said, look, I'm really sorry, I've been eavesdropping, but you need to be tested, because I couldn't even have one conversation without changing to a different one. I wouldn't finish the first conversation. And I just couldn't concentrate on anything.
Right.
So if you find that it's affecting your life, that's when you sit back and think, maybe.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of parents that will put their hands up and go, I know I'm ADHD, but I'm not being tested because it works for me.
Yeah.
So long as it's working in your life.
I don't think it's a negative at all. I think there's a strength within it and then there's the weakness part.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it was more the weakness coming out in me. But yeah. I say to parents when they say their child has autism, I tell them to stop thinking of it as a negative, because if I'm getting on a plane, I want a little autistic person to have serviced that plane, because they are so precise and everything has to be in their place. You know that plane's going to be great.
I love it. All right, let's move on to talking a little bit about the process of writing a book. Writing a book for a lot of people is scary, and sometimes even bringing a book on this topic, it's quite vulnerable because you are sharing your personal story and, you know, you're revealing because you really want to help others through this. And I really sense that from you. You have such a servant's heart, if you know what I mean. And just watching you and talking to you over the last 9 months and getting to know you, I see how much you just want to help these families, you know, have a better quality life. By the way, a few people have been watching, so good morning to you guys. And Vivi's just saying great insights and advice. And hey, Terrence and Janine and Lindy's watching there. So great to have you guys live with us. How was the process? I mean, you said you kind of wrote it before you attended the program so that you could just focus on, you know, I guess what we were teaching rather than just writing furiously during the writing recording hours. How was it for you going through it and the support and all that sort of stuff?
When you're writing it about a life story, I think it's easier than writing it about a subject because you've already got the data that you want to put in the book.
Yeah.
When I had my meeting with Stu, I said, well, we've got a bit of a problem. You're talking about chapters and I've done mine as lessons. But the best thing I did was join your big package where you do everything.
Yeah.
The support and the love and the not only from the 48-hour family, but the team and the other authors when you're going into meltdown. And you're like, I just can't have to I can't concentrate, I'm not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
All of us have been there before and the support is just amazing. So the second book that's coming out is chapters. And look, if I didn't have you guys behind me, there's no way that I would have gotten as far as I have. So a massive thank you to team.
Yeah, you've become part of almost like part of the family. You're so supportive of authors as well. I really love that. And you know, I know you've spent a bit of time with Julie, you know, recently. You guys were at an awards evening.
Yeah.
We're going to be traveling next year overseas and all that. So, you know, I just love each step of this journey, how much I've seen you also change and grow. You were quite all over the place at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Just by this first book coming out, like, you know, and just the things you've set up also, because you also had shoulder surgery, didn't you, recently?
Yeah, I had a shoulder reconstruction. Then, unfortunately, I've fallen on it, so I've got to go back in and have it done again.
Yeah.
But if I didn't, it's not just writing a book. Mm-hmm. It's the road to your self-discovery.
Yeah.
It's the road to... you'll never ever be the same person from start to end. It completely changes you as a person. And it also makes you realize that whether your friends are blood or those whether your family's blood or friends that you've chosen to be family, really shows you who's your support network. And look, writing a book, all you do is grow.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know my famous quote, you know, writing your first book is not about the book. It is really about the person you become at the other end of it. And often people ask about return on investment, and I go, well, it depends. What are you looking at? You know, and often people just go, how many books do I need to sell? Yet the biggest return on investment, I believe, is that personal growth. The biggest, the healing, the confidence, that, like, you know, just really you put your stamp on in terms of in the world what you stand for. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing you've taught me is that my book's a business card on steroids.
Yeah.
So the first chunk of books I'm actually going out and gifting to every school, every daycare, every community service group in town, to make them realize that if you have a family that's going through what I've gone through, share it. Because if you can't laugh at your own situation, feel free to laugh at mine, because I still do. Just little things, that quirky things that the kids do. But I didn't write my book to become a million-dollar author. I wrote my book to help people. I don't think I'll ever get back to my romance novel, because I've got my second book in its tracks and I've already got ideas on the third book, and it's all about helping people and supporting people in the community that need to know it's okay the way they're feeling, and it's okay to not be able to cope. Go find your village somewhere. And a lot of the time, unfortunately, it's not your blood family that's your village.
Absolutely. And I love the fact that your focus is on helping, because often, yeah, you know, there's a famous quote, I don't know exactly who said it, but, you know, you help enough people achieve their dreams, yours will be taken care of. And I love the fact that you're donating your books to community places and schools and all that sort of stuff, because it will come back tenfold.
It will
truly, you know, givers truly gain. But you need to go with that, you know, I want to help attitude, which is what you're doing. Anne-Marie is saying, I really like the observation that you would like someone with autism servicing the plane, many traits or strengths in the right circumstances. That's awesome. Yep. I love it. All right, so Jacinta, where can people buy your book? I believe I have got your, so let's show you guys a little close-up picture of, let me share, give me a second. I'm going to share the screen so you can see the book a little bit closer up. Here we go. So it's Trust Your Gut, Learning to Live with ADHD and Autism and the Road to Diagnosis. So that's what the book looks like. And then the second one is, I'm going to show you Jacinta's website, you guys. The second book is further down on her website, That Crushing Feeling. So it's upcoming, and identifying and overcoming the signs of anxiety and depression. And so if you want to find your place to get to this website, it's jacintadumas.com.au. So JACINTADUMAS, for those of you that might be listening to this as a podcast. So jacintadumas.com.au. I'm sure that the books will be available through all your good online resellers. So even if you do look them up, if you're watching this interview later down the track, and not in September 2023 when it was recorded, but look up the books, and that you'll find them on all your good online resellers. Not as yet, because I think right now we're in the final proofing stage of the
unfortunately my daughter was umming and ahhing whether she wanted her name in the book.
Yes.
And I said, well, your brother wants his name in the book, so it's your choice. He goes, well, I can't miss out. I could have told me this weeks ago.
Yeah. So we're moving it, progressing, which is bulk printing stage is the next stage, which means we'll release distribution as well. But people can go and purchase it from your website, I'm sure. That way you'll send them a copy. And I see Lindy's just posted the website as well in our chat in the comments. I wish you every success, Jacinta. I know
you'll
be around in our lives for a while to come. You know, so we're going on a holiday next March, and together, and we're going to be publishing second book, and as you said, your third one. And I just want to see how all of this also unfolds, because you work with a lot of families in your local community, but as we mentioned, Jacinta can help families online as well. So reach out to her if you are not sure, I think you do, or from what you've told me in the past, just the final thing is you do, like, Is it like an analysis session? What was it, an initial session?
It is. So I sit down with parents. I always sit down with the parents first. And the way I put it to them is spill your guts. Tell me everything. Because I sit there and take notes. And whether they choose to come permanently on board or not, I keep what I call my little black book. Okay. So I'll actually, they like really cheap from Kmart, and every family and child gets one so that I can keep notes. So if they decide to think on it and come back later, we don't have to redo it. And when they're saying to me that they pick that something's wrong, I can ask questions around that topic that either turns around that says, okay, that is normal behavior, or I can turn around and say, no, that needs to be investigated. And send them down the track they need.
Yeah, and you obviously refer people on to specific experts or psychiatrists or whatever it's needed. So you come from like almost like a counselling perspective, right, which is what you're qualified in. And, love it.
Amazing.
Great with that book, you guys. Jacinta is absolutely transformed right in front of my eyes. I can't wait to see all her other books start to come out, and I love her heart, mostly how much she cares for other people and wants to help them have that quality of life, you know, no matter what we have and special needs or whatever else, you know, we all aim to be happy, and that's ultimately the goal here in life. And our little ones, of course, that's all you want for them, is for them to grow and thrive. So thank you, Jacinta. I look forward to then us catching up when book two comes out, and then doing another interview on that topic and so on. So guys, go out there, trust your gut, as Jacinta says, and smash out this week ahead. Bye.
See you.